When it comes to anger, we've heard the helpful advice to never go to bed angry. Phyllis Diller has added another line to that: never go to bed angry, stay up and fight. That's probably good words too, and words potentially born out of love. We know that, well, in the church, you know, there's only really one or two right answers all the time: Jesus and love. But even committing to be together in the context of disagreement is born out of love as well, even a stronger kind of love. Second mile love, we could say. These words from the Sermon on the Mount are words that many of us who've grown up in the Mennonite church have heard over and over again when it comes to peacemaking and nonviolence and loving one another to the nth degree. But here, as we come to the end of this series, and talking about sin, I wondered if maybe by way of summary, we might think about these words again on the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus gives, these lofty words in the context of sin. And what does it mean for us to love sinners? What does it mean to see other people the way God sees other people? And how can we love the sinner inside of us? Because those of us who have grown up in the Mennonite church anyway have encountered this lofty vision of the Christian life, this lofty vision of faithfulness. What it means to follow Christ is going the second mile, is this lofty vision of non-retaliation, of not hitting back, of laying down our weapons. So when it has come to sin, or those that have fallen short of that vision, sometimes the only thing we've known to do and by way of response is to cut ourselves off, to separate from the sin or the sinner. Too often we haven't always been demonstrating second mile love in the context of sin. Because frankly, if there's one thing we've learned through this series is that we've all fallen short. We should have known that growing up in the church. All we like sheep have gone astray. We all are among those who sin, who fall short of even our own expectations and ideals and lofty visions for the right way. And we live with those who fall short of their and our expectations. So how do we continue to love and walk with people in the midst of falling short, in the midst of being sinners? Maybe the first place to start as we think about sin and love is to start, as we do so often in the church, with God. We start first with God. We think theologically about sin and redemption, this God who has come to love sinners, this God who goes out of God's way to love us and invite us back, a God who encounters us in Jesus, who faithfully faces temptation and resists sin and stays faithful to that way of God's love all the way to the cross, dying on the cross, forgiving those who crucified him on the cross. The cross shows us not only the darkness of our own sin, who put to death the sinless Son of God, but also shows us the full extent of God's love, how far God's love is willing to go to have us. And then it's the calling of the church, we who follow in the way of Jesus, to witness to that love, to demonstrate that extravagant story of love. So how do we do that? I borrowed a few points that William Willimon, in his book, Sinning Like a Christian, where he talks about the seven deadly sins, says in one little paragraph in his introduction about sin. And I've expanded some of these points this morning in summarizing how maybe we as God's people can think about sin and love. How do we witness to this extravagant love of God that comes to us in Jesus? It means, first of all, that when we get together for worship, we come as sinners, and we come dependent on the forgiveness of God. We come asking for God's forgiveness because we knowingly and sometimes unknowingly commit sin in our daily lives. We are part of the broken humanity. Unfortunately, we routinely hurt people. We fall short of our expectations. We make mistakes. We mess up. We fail. We come back to God as a sinner, dependent on God's forgiveness and God's love. And it's helpful for us to just keep that in mind as we think about what it means to live faithfully as a Christian. The second thing we do when we come together is that we will continue to hold out this high, lofty vision for the Christian life. That we will still hold forth this notion of discipleship and what it means to pick up our cross and follow Jesus daily. We, along with a very small and strange strand of God's people called Anabaptists and Christians throughout church history, have given voice to this lofty vision. We believe that God calls flawed and fallible humans to embrace and to live out this lofty expectation of loving enemies and going the second mile in our relationships, this high moral standard of agape love and nonviolence and refusing to pick up weapons and fight back and retaliate. Even we get together and we call our national leaders to explore other ways than violence to solve international problems. Like, can we at least talk about this? Can you explore diplomacy? Are there nonviolent actions that can be done? We witness to this lofty ethic in Jesus to love enemies and to do good to those who are out to do evil to us. That is part of our Christian calling. We believe that in living the faith in these small but significant ways, we help the world capture an alternative vision, a foretaste of eternity, what God's reign and desire for the world is really like. We strive in all of our imperfections and inconsistencies to follow the way of Jesus in the world. But the third thing that we need to keep in mind is that even in the midst of our accomplishments, we need a notion of humility. We need to carry our own successes lightly. Our moral accomplishments, all the good things that we might do as individuals, as a congregation, even as a denomination, as a church, we do as flawed sinners. And we have to be aware that all that we do is tinged with a little bit, and not just a little bit, of sinfulness. We are blessed to be part of a church that has done really some good things in the world. We have institutions for mental health, for education, schools, and education at many levels. We have retirement communities, global missions, disaster relief, economic development, and assistance. We help individuals. We help collectively. We do good in the world, but we often do them out of some misguided means sometimes. We are sinners, and even though we're called to do good works and great things, the good that we do is not the kingdom of God come. So we hold our accomplishments lightly as flawed and failed human beings. Fourthly, while we're talking about holding things lightly, we need to also hold the fails and the foibles of our neighbors lightly as well. Can we be gentle with our neighbor's shortcomings and failures? And maybe it's easier for us to be gentle with our neighbor's shortcomings and failures than it is to be gentle with the shortcomings and failures of those we live with, our family members, or our sisters and brothers in the church community when they don't live up to our expectations. How can we learn to see each other as the human, sinful, flawed people that we are? Too often, as I noted earlier, our vision for this holy vision, this church without spot and wrinkle, has ended up in our separation from those who have missed the mark, who have failed, because they haven't been able to uphold that impossible ethic in all the ways we think they should. But we're going to all fail at times. We're going to all miss the mark. And maybe while some sin is more obvious than others, more overt than others, how can we continue to love those whose sin is obvious and who have missed the mark? Because sooner or later, we'll all let down somebody by our humanness. Because of our high standards and our high calling, we're going to all need lots of understanding and grace. And we're still finding ways to do this and to hold in tension this high vision with our high ethic to love enemies and to walk with those and who fail and to forgive, as Jesus said, not just once or twice, but to forgive 70 times seven. Again and again and again. And finally, fifthly, maybe to quote William Willimon here, to witness and to let our lives testify to God's love and grace is to have a sense of humor. A sense of humor that is born out of our amazement that Jesus Christ died not for national glory or a two-car garage or a fat pension and all those things that we live our lives for, but Jesus Christ died to save sinners. That is, people like us. Because God's peculiar thing is a thing for sinners. It's possible, Willimon goes on to write, to confess our sin and to still live in faith and hope and love, knowing that even in our sin, we are able to believe that, as Romans 8:37 says, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. So friends, let us practice living this vision and the virtues that we've talked about, this virtue and vision of love. And we do that by loving the sinner inside of us, by loving us even when we fall short, knowing that Jesus came to love sinners. We continue to witness to this vision of love by striving toward that lofty vision of loving those around us and practicing love in all of our human relationships and walking with those then even who fail in embracing that love. Walking beside those who fall short, knowing that even there, Jesus comes to love sinners. Thanks be to God for this remarkable gift.